Sadly, this is the second mandatory podcast of this recording. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. Thankfully, ours will be slightly more entertaining. Welcome to episode 586 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. Glad you could join us. And it's Formula One time again, and it's the Blue Ribbon event on Day of Classics, the Monaco Grand Prix. Now with added pit stops. It went about as well as you'd expect, quite frankly. And we'll talk about it over the next probably half an hour. So we're not expecting this one to run long. This is kind of the cleanup episode, as I like to call it, after the initial high of the Indy 500. Thankfully, since that last recording, Cam Buckley has taken off his polo jersey and is now actually wearing some clothes. Hello, Cam. How you doing?
Yes, I'm now wearing my Ricky Bobby, if you ain't first, your last shirt, which is very accurate for Monaco, because if you don't qualify first, then you might as well be last. In fact, in honor of this race, I'm going to go take a nap while we're recording.
Turn your camera back on, Buckley. I will wake your ass up. Thank you. Also joining me is RJ O'Connell, and he's set to be on a plane in the next, 24 hours' time. He's been very loyal to us for doing this and recording anyway. God bless him.
I'd say it's, 16 hours into real time. We're recording this on the 28th. Fingers crossed in hashtag his FAA that I arrive safely in Detroit to take in the Detroit Grand Prix, which I'm sure we'll all be talking about and be very happy to talk about next week. But, you know, I figured I'd stick around. Why not? I watched Monaco. It was interesting. Didn't live up to all the hype, but some things to talk about, I guess.
Someone had hype for this Monaco Grand Prix.
Okay. It was at least going to be different.
What was it?
Well, the thing is, gentlemen, is that different doesn't necessarily mean good.
It's the skateboarder landing on the rake of someone going multiple seconds a lap slower to create a pit stop strategy at Monaco.
You know what this race was, and we'll talk about it a little bit more after we do the formal introductions in a moment. If you ever watched track cycling, this was the women's Madison. This was that race where you go round and round 120 times, and then you tag your woman as a partner and give them a little pull forward to get them back in front. That's what this was. Somewhere Ryan Eric King is watching this, and he's very proud of me for making a cycling reference on this show.
Yes, our new episode on Cycling 101 will be available on all podcast platforms next year.
Of course.
I think it's an easy, 30-second recording. Tadej Pogačar is going to win the Tour of France. Thank you for listening. In the meantime, here's where you can find actual Motorsport 101, Dre.
Yes, we're on youtube.com/Motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/Motorsport101. We're on Twitter at Motorsport_pod. You can follow us all personally on Blue Sky as well at CBuckley917, RJ O'Connell, and DreHarrison.bsky.social. You can also follow and get exclusive video highlights of the podcast on our Instagram page. That'll be, of course, Motorsport 101 pod. Keep an eye out for that. We may be on TikTok very soon as well. Stay tuned. I've got more homes to put our highlight reels. Watch this space. Watch this space. Watch this space. More on that soon. All of that good stuff. Also, if you want to check out our website, you can. Motorsport101.com. Check out the blog section. We've got reviews of everything that happened on Day of Classics weekend. Formula One's Monaco Grand Prix, MotoGP's British Grand Prix, the Indy 500, and an exclusive review of the first two episodes of the F1 Academy series on Netflix as well. I've written a lot of shit lately, let me tell you.
This thing is a rest.
I'm trying.
He needs a water cooler for his keyboard.
Stop giving me content to write about motorsport. Leave me alone for a... I've got an Ask Dre to sort out in a couple of days. August, the end of the month again. Shit. Anyway, you can also back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our content. You can upgrade to the $10 tier to listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, as Ghost Raptor and Jason are right now. Thank you for your continued support. What I might do is I might actually start putting up some of the highlight reels from the show that I don't actually end up putting on Instagram. That might be another way of incentivizing being on Patreon, because I keep spares of some of our highlights and things like that, and I never actually upload them because I ran out of days. So I might be a clever way of giving you even more content for those who don't listen to the episodes live. So see, I'm thinking up ideas on the fly. I'm being creative here. I'm trying. Somebody please pour like a bowl of water over my head.
What about a bottle of milk? No, wait, that was last episode. My apologies.
Yeah, to be fair. Well,
at least nobody demanded their milk was raw this year at the Indianapolis 500.
No.
I live in fear that somebody will eventually.
I'm glad we killed the buttermilk option off once and for all as well, because...
Carpenter is a sicko. We all knew this already.
Yeah.
Alex Pillow drank the one true milk, whole milk.
Pasteurized whole milk.
Yes.
Straight from the breast of Mother Nature itself. Yes. The
Are you proud of that? Are you proud of the sentence you said?
I real hard to hold that down. And he failed.
No. I'm just looking at you in disgust now.
I don't care. Bring it on.
I'm going to put the polo shirt back on.
Please keep your polo shirt off. It smells of milk. While Cam doesn't do that, we'll talk about Formula One's Monaco Grand Prix.
Was Monaco, but not as we knew it. The FIA had implemented a new two-stop mandatory policy for the race. Two green flag pit stops for tire changes. Lando Norris never really looked like losing after surviving a lockup in the Sandoval no heroics breeze. Charles Leclerc ran close after Max Verstappen tried to go over the top in his penultimate stint, hoping for a red flag or a safety car that never came. Norris survived a win ahead of Leclerc, Piastri, and Verstappen in fourth. By then, there was relative chaos with the Racing Bulls greeting the game plan of Liam Lawson backing up traffic so Isaac Hadjar could stop and maintain his position. It was a strategy that Williams and Mercedes also used further back, with Russell going one further and intentionally cutting a chicane to retake a position and collect the drive-through penalty for his trouble. Sadly, Mercedes at some point realized with about five to go, oh shit, we actually need to pit our drivers. So,
yeah.
You know, that torpedoed the whole thing. Dre was different. This worked.
Do you want the short answer or the long answer?
Okay. What were we trying to do here, first and foremost? We're trying to generate excitement in what is the most processional race on the calendar. We were racing around streets that were built 100 years ago and were raced on first by cars that were made 100 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, the short answer here is no. The long answer here is fuck no. Is the best way I can describe this. Look. First and foremost, I'm going to be real with you. I think, and this is going to be a bold, maybe the hottest take I ever drop on this podcast, I think this was a massive overreaction from the F1 community on this one, like completely shitting on this. Look, my first thought watching this race was, do you really want to go back to last year? Because last year was one of the worst F1 races I've ever seen. Genuinely.
Because a red flag allowed everyone to change their tires, and then no one could pass, and no one needed to pit. So no one did pass, no one did pit, and we drove around 5 to 10 seconds a lap off of our ultimate pace. Because that was... It did not matter how big the delta was on lap time, it wasn't worth it. You could have been 20 seconds a lap faster and someone could have blocked it off.
And that's the thing. By proxy, I can't say that this year's race was worse than that for that very reason.
Oh, of course not. No. Monaco is a double threat. It's awful and terrible.
At least
the only time it's entertaining is if you get carnage. We got some early. Pierre Gasly ramped off the back of Yuki Tsunoda. Fernando Alonso's engine gave out. Please retire, dog. You have so much. You have nothing to gain.
Still 0 points.
It took a long, long, long time, but Fernando Alonso's finally broken RJO.
I was resigned to this years ago when he came back.
And then it was really good for a couple of years. And then this year, it really, well,
it was good for half of a season. Let's be real. Can I say also,
it was good in 2022.
I liked what Racing Bulls did. Having Liam Lawson back the wagon up, Isaac Hadjer looked good for a better finish than the sixth place that he's got. And that's saying something. Who knew Racing Bulls?
Also, can I
executing
say,
a good strategy.
Also, can I say, what was that pronunciation of Lassen just a minute ago? Did you suddenly go Australian?
Dude, sometimes words come out of my mouth like really funny. Lassen. It happens.
Liam Lawson from New Zealand.
I was never diagnosed with a speech impediment. It's fine.
No, I was. Don't worry. No, that feeling.
Preaching the choir on that one.
Yeah, look, props to Racing Bulls. They figured out what, quote, the meta was here. And the meta was have one of your drivers back the wagon up, build up a 20-second lead of clear space in front of them, and then have the car in front box so it can maintain track position when it came out the other end. And then you can push again to get the concertina effect going again, because the delta to overtake around Monaco is 3 seconds a lap. The whole field isn't covered by 3 seconds a lap.
I think that's underselling it, too. I think it's bigger. If you actually start defending into corners, it'll be bigger.
It's
Yeah, it was ass.
Yeah.
What do you want me to get out of this race? Like, it was better than last year. Last year's probably the worst race without someone dying that I've ever watched.
Well, let's see this. Lando Norris finally got back to what he was good at last year, qualifying up at the front. And because it's Monaco, he could lock up in a Sandovat and, you know, not be punished for it too badly, because overtaking always comes the highest premium, even more expensive than the yachts that we're never going to be able to afford that are parked beside the track.
Look, say what you will about Lando Norris, and people have given Lando a lot of shit for the last year and change for all the shit he's been given for the Oscar Piastri hype train of 2025. Lando's 3 points off the top again.
Oh yeah, because they've both left points on the table, and this was another weekend where Piastri's turn. Piastri's turn to not quite get it all done in quality.
The one thing about this is that Lando Norris has not finished a Grand Prix lower than fourth this season. Like, it's like
I would hope so. I would hope so, given how McLaren have been this year.
It's kind of one when you look at it like that and you realize that, yeah, he's made mistakes, mostly in qualifying, but he has recovered reasonably well from those mistakes to take what was available to him at the time. And that's why it's only a 3-point game. In terms of Grand Prix results, Piastri still has made the biggest single mistake of the year by that ninth in Australia. That's why it's only a 3-point game between them in the championship. And this was a race weekend where qualifying was everything, and Lando obliterated the lap record to have the first ever sub 72nd lap of Monaco. And it was a stunning, stunning lap. Incredibly done. Incredibly well done. And yeah. The Iceman is the Oscar Piastri, the Iceman, as people want to call him, he's melting a little bit. There's no getting around it. This was the second weekend in a row where he left something to be, he left something on the table. He left an opportunity for Norris to beat him, and Norris has done it two weekends in a row. I think that, and look, this is just a general observation of mine when it comes to Lando, that man can't win if he tries sometimes. Like, my man qualified on pole, set the fastest ever pole lap of Monaco, a historically great qualifying run, gets out of the car, and he's immediately asked by somebody in the media, why aren't you smiling more at this? I'm like, the man got off social
media. My favorite question.
The man got off of social media, he's got a new girlfriend, he's hard launching at this Grand Prix, and he's actually got his head down and driven to the best of his ability. Isn't this what you motherfuckers wanted? Like,
imagine the out of context telling someone 20 years ago a hard launching a new girlfriend. What the hell does it even mean anymore?
What does this mean? I'm just trying to play Midnight Club Los Angeles. Sorry, Midnight Club 3 Dub Edition. I got my timeline mixed up there for a second.
I'm too busy playing Celebrity Overnight by Twister in the middle of this race.
I'm busy working two jobs. Ken Kutaragi told me to do so if I want a PS3.
Exactly. That man, I think, sometimes cannot win if he tries. And I feel bad for Lando in that regard, where it's like, nothing he ever does except of a perfect victory is ever going to be enough to please the people that think he's the bona fide, he has to win everything in order to be him.
When he has a perfect race, it's at this point, it's a product of the car he drives and not of the talent of, altogether now, a former British Formula 4 and European Formula 3 champion who was a title contender in his one and only season of Formula 2 and won on his debut race.
I've said this for some time. Oscar Piastri is part of the problem. Not necessarily him directly, but fans who wanted to be early adopters of Oscar and thinking that he was going to be the potential guy that was going to beat Lando in the long run. And now they've finally seen the possibility of that happen this year. They're all in. They've shoved all their chips over the table without realizing that for all the shit we've given Oscar, we've given him a whole heap of flowers, won three McLaren races in a row, first driver to do so for that team in 27 years. You know, a guy that has had very good qualifying, has won 4 out of 8 so far. He's done all of that for a 3-point lead.
They're at the point of the season we're at now, their seasons look quite similar in terms of mistakes and maximized opportunities. Okay. Oscar, with the, like, he's left a couple big qualifying sessions on the table, and he left the points on the table in Australia. And Norris, again, couple of mistakes here and there, has had a couple of great races. Charles Leclerc.
Yeah, does Charles Leclerc's performance, is that partially responsible for altering the perception of Norris and Piastri's races? Because Charles Leclerc did fantastic. It turns out the hometown curse may not actually still be kicking.
Well, just missed out on pole. It turns out when you only have to set the Ferrari up for one type of corners, it can corner at times. At least in Charles's hands. More on Lewis Hamilton later on.
For that, we know that, like, everybody is driving to goofy deltas. Although Lewis Hamilton is not really giving us
Is Lewis Hamilton near as enough a minute slower across the race than Charles Leclerc?
No. At least I don't think so.
Here he was.
No, that was the best Ferrari's looked all year. As Cam quite rightly said, I think a big chunk of that was down to the fact that they didn't have to worry about ride height around here, given it's Monaco.
You don't have to worry about ride height, but everyone does. That you don't have to worry about medium and low and high speed turns when, what's the fastest corner here? 130, 140 miles an hour.
Yeah, it's a back. So you don't have to worry about that. And for what's Ferrari always had in abundance, mechanical grip. They've always had very nice mechanically gripping cars.
Even when they stink, they're usually still pretty good at Monaco.
Yeah. And Charles is Charles. We all know that he is. Look, there are still a fraction of people out there that don't think he's a top tier driver, and these people are nuts. Honestly, Charles Leclerc is him. That man is a juggernaut of a driver. And, like, the Ferrari is not there this year, and yet he is the only... he's the only two Grand Prix podiums they've had this year. Again, it's embarrassing that last year's team that was constructors runners-up only has two Grand Prix podiums through 8 rounds this year. But Charles Leclerc is not the reason why that's happened. He's been phenomenal this season. This was another great drive from him. It's just, again, it's Monaco. There's only so much you can do. If he qualifies from pole, he wins this race. It's that simple. Unfortunately, he was...
I knew that he smoked the lap as well because he swore all the way back to the pit lane.
He knew that he'd left a temp on the table, and that temp was enough to punish him. It's that simple. The door was ever so slightly open, and he was punished for it. It's unfortunate, but that's Monaco, baby. And that's how it goes. Props to Max Verstappen and Red Bull for at least trying to be different about it as well. I mean,
I loved his comment after the race of maybe they should try throwing bananas out of the cockpit like it's Mario Kart.
he's such
man
an
after
awesome.
My own heart. Man after my own heart, Max Verstappen. Yes, went so long that they pitted on the last available lap to pit, hoping for a red flag or a safety car. didn't get it. Lost nothing from it.
Yeah.
Piastri, lonely race to third. Verstappen, mostly lonely race to fourth, other than when he was holding up the leaders on the dead tires. Lewis Hamilton, taken to Gappelbees.
Esteban Ocon had a good day. Yuki Tsunoda had a not good day where he was just left to die on strategy after qualifying midfield. The Albon Russell funniness, that shithousery was great.
It was funny, if nothing else. Like, look, a message to George Russell. No one is saying that you can't cheat, but in the words of legendary rugby referee, the great Nigel Owens, if you're going to cheat, cheat well. Don't
tell the organizers, I'll take the penalty. You silly, silly man.
This man is the head of the drivers union. He's 27 years old. And this is what? His seventh season in Formula One now. And he openly said on team radio he was going to break the rules. And let me add on top of that real quick as well. The race director's notes going into this weekend told the teams, we think you guys are going to cut this chicane on purpose. If you do, we will throw the 10-second time penalty out of the window. And yet he did it anyway.
Yep. He's like, I'll take stupid the 5 boy. To 10. Got a drive-through and concluded Mercedes is no good, terrible, very bad weekend.
I mean, it was
the whole reason why Ferrari was able to even get as close in the Constructors' Championships as they are now.
Yeah. It was all
like 6 points ahead of Max Verstappen as a constructor.
Yeah, shit's wild. I mean, look, it was all over on Saturday for them. Like, Kimi Antonelli crashed at the outside of the Nouvelle chicane. George Russell's car died in qualifying. So they were stuck in 14th and 15th, and that pretty much killed their weekend from the start. And like I said, they basically just got tired of Williams, who adopted the Racing Bulls meta of, you know, the park your car and form a queue and have your driver switch a room. That rhymed accidentally.
Points.
Thank you, sir. And George Russell decided that, sod that, I want to lead this train. So he cut. I mean, look, it's an extremely dangerous thing to do. We cannot possibly for a second endorse this nonsense. And the stewards were absolutely right to give him a drive-through penalty for it, because they openly said it again. I have to stress this again. The notes said, we will throw out the 10-second penalty because we don't think it's sufficient enough as a deterrent. For this exact scenario, for once, the stewards were bang on. They saw this coming a mile away, and they hit them with it. And it got so bad that Toto Wolff and James Vowles were beefing during the race.
They were Toto Wolff was yelling from a balcony at this dude. It's like something out of
an 80s fucking sitcom. They used to be co-workers.
It was like something out of an 80s sitcom.
Did he look down on the balcony and say, it's over, James, I have the high ground? I feel like James Vowles is like Sidney Crosby in hockey. He's too pretty to drop the gloves and actually fight someone. Like, we're speculating over a potential fight club that didn't quite happen here, but I don't have James Vowles down as the sort of guy to engage in fisticuffs.
Now, I feel like he would be the person to write you a strongly worded.
Yeah, he's like that time Bryce Harper tried to swing at Hunter Strickland. That was the definition of a white boy that's not been in very many fights.
Yeah.
You could tell.
Yeah.
Like,
what else?
Also, I love the sheepish fact that James Vowles later admitted he texted Toto to say sorry afterwards.
Aww.
Softy. Absolute softy.
Maintain the beef. You gotta start beef. You gotta maintain beef.
My man poured water on his well done steak, like it's Patrick Mahomes up in here.
And he poured a nice glass of red wine for him to enjoy at the hotel.
And that McDonald's house red. Was there anything else that happened this race?
Not really. I mean, this is a race that feels endemic of the problems that modern Monaco has. It's always been a place that's tough to overtake. Mm-hmm. This change to the rule books, the sporting regulations for this event, is different. I don't think it works. I mean, because we've now had like Alex Burtz, former driver of the JPDA, put together a proposal of how he'd move the Novell chicane further up the road to try and alleviate some problems. It's not the only suggestion that's been made to reprofile the track. I mean, what do we do here to fix the problem? Knowing that it is always going to be a tough place to overtake. It's never going to be Bahrain. It's never going to be Las Vegas.
Look, I would go for the jokey reaction and say hit it with that bulldozer in the style of Cam Buckley.
And I will still maintain words of Denny Hamlin, I'd start with a bulldozer.
But that's not happening. And we all know that's not. We all know it's not happening. Monica, I mean, look.
It's going to stick around forever, and it's going to be awful forever, and we're all just going to have to sit there and eat it.
And look, I'll be real with you. Full disclosure, I produced the man's podcast, but I had James Allen tell me when producing his show today that Monaco was buzzing commercially again for the first time in quite a few years. There was a lot of people down there to do brand deals, a lot more yachts there this year. There was, you know, big announcements. I mean, this was the week that F1 announced a brand new brand deal with Pepsi, which is huge. F1 has an official energy drink. You know, we had a bunch of first-time sponsors come down this weekend. More influencers than
the official stack of Formula One.
Mm-hmm.
God, we really are just a bunch of fucking gamers.
We really are. We really...
Gamers derogatory.
Gamers derogatory. Hard R's. You name it. Just
whoa!
Neither of the Caucasian people on this panel are going that far.
No, thankfully. You're not Kyle Larson.
Would the Kyle Larsons in the chat please sit down?
No.
That old shithousery we forgot to mention in the last podcast.
They're going to be named the Gatorade Sprint Race going forward now. That's an official part of the brand activation that they're going to be known as the Gatorade Sprint Race.
We got to hear the Travis Scott song during the entire sprint race again.
No, please no. But my point is that Monaco has become the glitz and glamour business round again. So it really is not going anywhere. And
which is crazy because wasn't that what they made Vegas? Wasn't that what Vegas supposed to be?
More.
Yeah,
it's,
more.
It's
not, look, line go up, buddy. Look, line
what,
go up.
What Formula One did with Vegas was pure greed. Okay, call it what it is. And don't get me wrong, I like Vegas for the most part. I do not. I think it's produced good racing for the most part. I don't hate Vegas at all. But call it what it was from Formula One. Pure decadence. It's like taking a millionaire shortbread and then dipping it in maple syrup just because you can. It didn't need to be done. It's a delicious shortbread as it is. You don't need to put syrup on it. And yet that's what Formula One decided to do. They are not going to stop this. And look, I appreciate Alex Wurz's ideas of trying to alter the layout slightly to maybe give us a 2% chance of a better overtake. I don't see it, personally. Look, at this point, I think you've got three options. Number one, you bulldozer the place and say F1 doesn't need Monaco anymore and we've moved on from it. I don't think there'd be too many complaints from people if that were the case. Number two, you like it and lump it. You just say, fuck it. You get rid of this mandatory two-stop bollocks. Just go back to normal and say, fuck it, Monaco is just Monaco. And when we just accept the race for what it is, right? Because there's a lot of people that still have this placebo because it's such a tough circuit, it's a driver's test, you just keep it on the calendar and have it test people by having close barriers and bullshit, right? I like my third option. You turn it into a cycling time trial stage. And people are going to say, Dre, what's this shitty gimmick? And I'm like, listen, motherfuckers, this is Formula One. Everything's a goddamn gimmick. You only call it a gimmick when it's something you don't like, right? Here's my idea, and I put this in my blog, and I will entertain people criticizing me for it. I said, turn it into a two-day time trial event. You can have a qualifying session conventionally on Saturday morning to determine a running order. Whoever gets pole position, it gets to run last. And then you turn it into a cycling time trial stage. You release cars roughly once a minute until there's free on track at any given time. So there's no chance of traffic or dirty air or anything like that unless there's an accident or something else happens, right? You could just VSC. Do a 30-lap time trial. That's 30 laps of Monaco is basically 100 kilometers. Almost exactly, right? Turn it into a 100-kilometer time trial. Send drivers out. Tell them to do 30 hot laps as fast as possible. Top 10 at the end of the day's running gets 25 championship points and they work it their way down like that. I'd watch that. If we're okay with watching 7 hours of an Indy 500 qualifying session, even without the bump day drama now, because that's now a separate day in its own right, why not do this?
It's a fair point.
I would love to see that. People would never accept that not be like that remaining a part of the championship.
I get that.
Yeah, I think they'd rather soon the Monaco Grand Prix become like the big Formula E event, because we all know those cars can race there. And we know, look, the first Monaco E Prix can never be top for a variety of reasons. But it proves that it's not all the track's fault. The other thing to consider is that, is the principality just neglectful? That they could have made so many changes a while back and just didn't?
Maybe, but you are still dealing with the infrastructure of a track that's which is pretty much on the coast. Like, you are limited in terms of what you can do with the facility, how many roads you've got to shut down. You've got to remember, at night, that is still a public road that people are meant to drive on.
That's true.
There's no getting around that. So all this talk about, why don't you just knock this down, or why don't you just use this road instead of that road? It's not as simple as that. But like as John Oliver proved years ago on Last Week Tonight, infrastructure is not sexy, but is a very important part of how we function in our daily lives. And Monaco doesn't necessarily need Formula One for it to still function how it functions. It doesn't need to bend over backwards just for F1's benefit for 4 days a year. Quite frankly. So
I get it.
You know,
I get it. This was a very tough race to digest, and a lot of drivers were frustrated with it. And I don't want, because, and if they lose all the drivers, then they probably lose this race. And me personally, I'm one of those sickos who actually like, I look forward to the Monaco Grand Prix, not just for the possibility that we could get the one entertaining shithouse race, because like, the Monaco Grand Prix was like the first F1 event that I really grew up with and was like, wow, that's special. There's nothing like this. I didn't know about how F1 racing worked as a child. I just knew that like, that's the Monaco Grand Prix. And yeah, we could threaten to take it off the calendar and say the Formula One's outgrown it. If that day comes, I don't think a lot of people will be pleased about it. Even the people that are saying, we dropped Imola but kept Monaco. Like, Imola's not got the same problems.
But Monaco's always been given a pass by a lot more people because of its heritage and history and the fact that it's been racing for 100 years. Imola
Monaco's got that cachet.
Yeah.
Imola's cachet is that two people died here 30 years ago.
You know, it's that Monaco's got a benefit of the doubt by a lot of F1 fans that Imola just does not have. And that's, and don't get me wrong, I fully agree with the sentiment. Has. Yeah. It in the eyes of many, rightly or wrongly, it is the crown jewel of Formula One's racing. It is the blue ribbon event of their calendar. That's the toughest race we go to, and winning that means something. One leg of the Triple Crown, it's the one you tell your grandkids about. Lando Norris himself said, so far, that's probably the achievement of his career, and he said that one day I'll be able to tell my kids that I won the Monaco Grand Prix. It means something to these people. There's no doubt about that. You know, and that's going to be a hard thing to go away from, even if the drivers initially don't like it. Not many people can say they've won the Monaco Grand Prix. And yeah, that's always going to be a difficult placebo feeling to navigate, unfortunately. And I wish it was simpler than that, but it just isn't.
I mean, we're going to go to a place in Catalonia right now, which... we've always shit on that event, and we're sad to potentially lose it soon.
Because at least it still represents a traditional-looking Grand Prix on a conventional road course and not a Madrid-based museum.
Yeah.
Where the demonstration lap is so good that, like, the person doing the demonstration lap crashes twice.
Yeah.
It can't be a case where we go, like, oh, well, you were complaining about this track a couple years, like, my brother in Christ. That's because we either keep it or replace it with something better, not worse.
Yeah, at the end of the day, right, people didn't like Catalunya, and understandably why. It's a track that unfortunately should produce better racing than it does in the end, which is unfortunate. But it's not necessarily the fact that people like or dislike Madrid. It's what it represents. It represents another street track in a F1 calendar where the conventional road course is quickly going the way of the dodo and is getting squeezed out for more street projects in elaborate places, while the traditional rounds that made up the backbone of this calendar when we were growing up in the 90s are slowly being chalked off one by one, right? Like, I don't think Madrid necessarily would get shit on if this was brought onto the calendar 10, 15 years ago. Valencia wasn't dunked on like this when we had it on the F1 calendar.
Ooh, I don't know about that.
Well, that track produced a sum total of one good race.
Yeah, and that one good race was when it was over.
Yeah, but at the same time,
People didn't smoke that race before it got on the calendar. They started smoking that race over low heat when they realized people can't race here at all.
Yeah, and unfortunately, F1's getting more and more desperate to have its brand identity be taking the race into the streets and bringing it directly to the people, as opposed to having conventional races in grandstands and having them on tracks that we've seen for 20, 30 years.
You always want to be the mid-2000s Champ Car World Series, which popped up with a number of street races out of desperation because they didn't or couldn't play ball with the owner of, like, most permanent circuits in the United States. But I digress.
Yeah, that's the game. And unfortunately, this is the game that F1's chosen to play. And unfortunately, those two mentalities of new fangled fancy street tracks and brand identity compared to old historical venues that please your dad, they're starting to meet in the middle a bit more now, and it's going to be the sport making some very tough decisions going forward. We'll have to wait and see.
I agree. Still, it could be worse.
Could it?
Could be how it's done. Sorry, man.
Send his ass to Chinese F4.
Send him to Galveston with all Flacco that dirty water.
Flacco reels for days. Nah. That was one of the dumbest moves. No heroics into Sandoval. Avengers theme starts playing in his helmet.
We're gonna get so many emails from the Irish contingent, our community, growing by the day.
Don't care.
As it turns out.
Bite me. Like, this is what you get.
I argue with your mother.
This is what you get for spearing Victor Martins into the Sandoval barricade like his name was Roman Reigns. Suck it up, okay? That was some bullshit. Formula One is back this weekend for the Spanish Grand Prix at Catalunya. We'll talk about that sometime next week. We've got a MotoGP episode to record tomorrow as well on the British Grand Prix and the heartbreaker for Fabio Quartararo, because once again, we get to say on this podcast, why not Bez? Why not Bez? More on that soon. Until then, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been RJ O'Connell and Cameron Buckley. Until next time, thanks for listening. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
But hey, at least Johan Zarco's still getting jiggy with it.